You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
What happened in Boston on Saturday was... it was beautiful. Backing way up. Remember those alt-right Nazi assholes and their white supremacist asshole pals who terrorized Charlottesville? The assholes marching around with torches, carrying Nazi flags, and killing people. Those assholes. The men Donald Trump described as very fine people. Well, the same assholes staged a march in Boston on Saturday, 1 week after Charlottesville. Fewer than 100 neo-Nazi white supremacist assholes showed up to assert their right under the First Amendment to say hateful, racist, anti-Semitic things in public. And more than 20,000 counter-protesters organized by Black Lives Matter and a coalition of other progressive orgs, they were there to say, no, this country does not belong to you. It belongs to all of us. And what makes Boston even more remarkable and that turnout even more remarkable? All those people showed up on Saturday in Boston, even though Tina Fey on Thursday told them to stay home.
I know a lot of us are feeling anxious and we're asking ourselves, like, what can I do? I'm just one person. What can I do? And so I would urge people this Saturday, instead of participating in the screaming matches and potential violence, find a local business you support, maybe a Jewish-run bakery or an African-American-run bakery. Order a cake with the American flag on it, like this one, and just eat it, Colin.
Wait, I'm sorry, how is that supposed to help?
Love is love, Colin.
I'm sorry, what?
And then next time when you see a bunch of white boys in polo shirts scream about taking our country back, and you want to scream, it's not our country, we stole it from the Native Americans. They stole it from the Native Americans, and when they have a peaceful protest at Standing Rock, we shoot at them with rubber bullets, but we let you chinless turds march through the streets with semi-automatic weapons. And what you want to yell at, don't yell it at the Klan, Colin. Yell it into the cake.
That was Faye on last Thursday night's Weekend Update. Saturday Night Live does midweek shows during the summer, and they still do Weekend Update on those shows. And she urged people to stay home and yell into sheet cakes, hashtag sheet caking. It was a joke. It was a comedic conceit that allowed Faye to rip on Nazis and Trump and Paul Ryan and Ann Coulter and point out the hypocrisy in the way we treat Native American protesters versus white supremacist asshole protesters on national television for 5 straight minutes. That's where she showed up. That's what she did. And the bit, which was hilarious, it was really well received at first. Tina Fey absolutely destroys Nazis, Trump, and Paul Ryan while eating a sheet cake, read the headline at HuffPo. And she did destroy them, hilariously. I mean, come on.
Then when Ann Coulter crawls out of her roach motel and says, Antifa attacked Republicans in Berkeley, and you're like, okay, yard sale, Barbie. But the other side is Nazis and Klansmen. And also, who drove the car into the crowd? Hillary's emails?
Fucking hilarious. As was this.
Where's Paul Ryan in all this, right? You're supposed to be like the cool young congressman, but you don't know how to at somebody on Twitter? Oh. Racism is bad at real Donald Trump, you pussy.
But it didn't take long for the your fave is problematic crowd to take to their keyboards and start scolding Faye for being a bad lefty and calling out anyone who thought her bit was funny and helped it go viral on social media. Because they believed Faye was literally telling people to stay home, do nothing, and yell at sheet cakes. Tina Fey, who was slamming Trump and Nazis and Paul Ryan and Ann Coulter on national television, she wanted the rest of us to stay home and shout whatever it was we had to say into a cake and avoid the hate rallies. Never mind, as Jezebel commenter Metamorphos pointed out, and I quote, "This is actually what people who study white nationalist groups advise. Don't show up, because the whole goal of these protests is to generate footage of people hitting Nazis to give ammunition to the vile many sides narrative that claims that those who resist the alt-right are the problem. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which monitors hate groups, they advise people against attending hate rallies. They, the haters, are coming to provoke, so don't show up. Don't be provoked. And unlike Faye and her sheet cake on SNL, the SPLC is deadly serious about this. Faye, however, wasn't serious. Hashtag sheet caking is not actually a movement. The blogger John Gruber wrote this. I remember being a kid and learning that Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal was controversial in its time because some sanctimonious shitheads thought Swift was literally telling people to eat Irish children. I just couldn't believe there were people who were incapable of understanding satire. But here we are today with people thinking Tina Fey literally wants us to stay home and eat cake. And if that's what you think, let me break it to you, Gruber continues. Your heart might be in the right place, but you are an idiot. I want to second that. Tina Fey, to borrow a phrase, is one of our problematic faves. Like too many folks, she's not great on sex workers' rights, she's made biphobic jokes, and she's viewed as being insufficiently woke on race. But problematic can be hurled at every comedian on the planet, particularly every male comedian on the planet with similar stature and a similar platform. Louis C.K., for Christ's sake, did an entire set on child rape, joking about child rape on Saturday Night Live. And if your beef with Faye is that she doesn't want people to protest Nazis, that she was literally calling for people to stay home, again, I agree with Gruber. You are indeed an idiot. Now, if you're a listener, and presumably you are because you are listening right now, you know where I stand on the whole showing up thing. I am always encouraging my listeners to show the fuck up, to get out of the house, to get out there and fight back, to do something. Most of my opening show rants, and not with a call to cake, even though I love cake, cake is delicious, but a call to action, something we all can and should do. Now, the organizers of the huge, hugely successful, and again, entirely peaceful counter-protest in Boston, they were aware of this, the trap that SPLC talks about Nazis and white supremacists setting. They're trying to provoke you. They want violence. But the organizers, particularly those from Black Lives Matter in Boston, they wanted people to show up. They wanted to keep it peaceful. Black Lives Matter activists escorted lost Nazis through the crowd of counter-protesters, keeping them safe and preventing a riot. Now, there's a debate right now in San Francisco about an upcoming quote-unquote free speech rally by Nazis and white supremacists in the Bay Area. Should people go and protest, or per the SPLC, should they stay away and deny Nazis and white supremacists the confrontation they seek? I think people should go. And I think Tina Fey thinks people should go, too. Oh, one more thing that happened in Boston. So interesting. People showed up. People went to the counter protest, despite being told to stay away by Tina Fey. And a lot of them brought sheet cakes. So it would seem the message people took away from Faye's bit on SNL wasn't don't go. It was go. And hey, maybe bring a cake. Because everybody loves cake. Every decent person also loves telling Nazis to go fuck themselves. Want as many people as possible to come to your counter-protest? Tell them that they not only get to yell at Nazis, but that cake will be served. All right, coming up on today's show, in the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast, Alexander Chavez joins us to talk about women in gay bars, which gay bars women are welcome in, which gay bars maybe women aren't welcome in. That's on the Magnum, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much show, guests, and no ads. And on the free micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your questions, lots of my answers, all that coming up. Thanks to RX Bar for supporting the Savage Lovecast. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order at rxbar.com/savage and use the promo code SAVAGE. That's rxbar.com/savage, promo code SAVAGE.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout to get 10% off. That's squarespace.com, offer code SAVAGE.
Today's Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Me Undies. High quality, super comfortable, good looking undies. Get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Savage.
Hi, Dan. 22-year-old straight female, LA area. I had a question about kinky stuff. Me and my ex definitely started doing kinky stuff maybe 3-4 months into our relationship. A lot of, I guess, dom sub type things, tying each other up, well, him tying me up. Just definitely that kind of kinky, fun stuff, watching porn together, all that stuff. And sexually, we had a great relationship, but everything else was missing. It actually ended up being like a very emotionally abusive relationship. He was very controlling. When we broke up, he was all types of crazy. And now I'm in a new relationship, and it's been actually maybe like 10 months now. We haven't done anything kinky. I could tell my boyfriend's into it, but I'm holding back from doing that kind of stuff because I'm scared of how my last relationship ended up. Part of me feels like maybe because I allowed him to dominate so much in the bedroom, that's why he started becoming so controlling in all aspects of our relationship, and that ultimately was terrible for me, and I don't want to be stuck in a situation like that again. So I guess what I'm wondering is how can you make it clear or prevent that dom-sub relationship from leaving the bedroom and entering the relationship? Because right now in the relationship, we're definitely equal, but I don't want my current boyfriend to kind of become controlling or crazy like my last one did. I don't know if my question has an answer to it, but I'd like to know your opinion. Thanks.
There are people out there with control issues who are domineering and manipulative and abusive, whose sexual tastes are entirely vanilla. So you may be linking two things that are unrelated. Maybe I'm being too glib. Maybe I'm being too Pollyanna. Someone with control issues may be attracted to a DS dynamic as a way of not having the DS sex that always turned them on, but as a way of covering for their control issues, as a way of disguising their manipulative awfulness, and that the jollies they're getting from DS sex aren't so much about the DS sex, it's about the manipulation and control. How do you protect yourself from winding up in a DS relationship with those people? By being clear about your boundaries and clear about what you will and won't accept. You've been in one DS relationship where the domination / submission dynamic spilled out of the bedroom, that it sloshed out of the sex and onto other parts of the relationship. And if that made you unhappy, then you be clear the next time you enter into a relationship where at least the sexual aspect of it, you would like it to have some DS dynamics, some DS excitement and play. You be very clear that you are submissive in the bedroom and nowhere else, or submissive when you're wearing a collar and at no other time. And then stick the fuck up for yourself. If you feel that this person is unfairly leveraging your sexual submissiveness against you in circumstances and at times and around issues that aren't about consensual, mutually pleasurable sexual exploration, speak the fuck up. Tell the guy that you are not into TPE. You are not looking for total power exchange, that you are no one's slave and you will never be his, that for you, this is sex play. This is cops and robbers for grownups with your pants off and orgasms. It is not lifestyle. You are not his property. You will not be ordered around except when you order him to order you around. Except at those times, you do not take orders. You are not the window at Jack in the Box.
Hey, Dan. I am a 26-year-old female lesbian. So I guess my question is, I have been seeing another 26-year-old female for about 2 months now. I've actually known her for about 4 years. And we had like kissed a while back, and then she moved away and I didn't see her for 4 years. And now she's back and we kind of just picked up where we left off. The only thing is that she has actually never been with a woman before. And she says, like, I'm pretty much the only girl that she's been interested in and the only one that she's been attracted to. Our relationship has like pretty much blossomed into something like really great. I mean, we get along really well. Sex is great. Everything is really great. Except I'm kind of freaking out because, you know, the fact that she's never been with a woman, I don't really know if this is like a phase for her or what, but I know that she has, like, you know, goals in life. She, like, wants a family and kids and stuff. And I don't know if, you know, I'm wasting my time with this girl or what. But basically, I just want to know what you think. She says, you know, when we get drunk or whatever, she'll be like, yeah, I've never felt like this about anyone. It's so nice to be with a woman. You're like my best friend, but also my lover. And yeah, if you could just help me out, that'd be great.
I'm sorry I can't help you. Because what you're asking me for is a guarantee. What you want is for me to say nothing could possibly go wrong and there's nothing to worry about and your fears are unfounded. And I can't tell you that. Not because you're dating someone who's never been in a same-sex relationship before, because you're with a woman who's never been with a woman before, but because there's no guarantees in any relationship regardless. You could be dating someone who's dated only women and been a gold star lesbian her entire life, and it could end. It could come to shit for other reasons. This could come to shit. This could end the relationship that you're in now. And maybe the fact that she's only been with men prior to you could contribute. Or maybe it could be completely unrelated to that fact. It could be something else. Maybe she's bi. Maybe this relationship that you're in has helped her to realize that despite all the men that she slept with in the past or the opposite sex relationship she's been in, that she was a lesbian all along and finally everything makes sense thanks to you. Even so, no guarantee that you will be together for the rest of your life. There are no guarantees. That is the existential terror at the heart of every relationship, short-term, long-term, new, old, whatever. It could come to shit. And so you suspend your disbelief and you go through your day believing that it will not come to shit and that things will continue to be as good as they are now or get better in different ways. And you live in hope. It's all you can really do. That's all I can give you. Can't give you the guarantee that you're seeking. I can't give you that. Sounds like you're in a pretty decent relationship with someone you really like and the sex is good. Stick around. See how it plays out. Maybe you'll be together forever. Maybe you won't. Maybe if it ends, you'll salvage a friendship. Maybe you won't. Maybe she'll be a lesbian after this relationship with you. Maybe she will revert to opposite sex land and presumed heterosexuality. You just can't know what the fuck is going to happen. But you can enjoy the time that you have with this person while you're having it. Thanks to RX Bar for supporting the Savage Love Cast. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar made with 100% whole ingredients and no BS. No added sugar, no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, no preservatives, no fillers. RX bars are made with a few simple, clean ingredients where every ingredient serves a purpose. RX bars are gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free with no added sugar, no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. And they come in 11 flavor varieties. Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, there is an RX bar for you, and you can actually taste the cocoa, the real fruit, and the spices. RX bars are ideal for breakfast on the go, a snack at the office, throwing in your bag for the plane, tossing in your backpack for a bike ride or hike, and having in your gym bag for pre- or post-workout snacks. As usual, when I get to try new products, I offer some to the tech-savvy at-risk youth who pounced on them like a pack of snarling jackals. All that was left at the end of the day was a pile of crumbs and wrappers. Get 25% off your first order at rxbar.com/savage and use the promo code savage. That's rxbar.com/savage, promo code savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling because I have a very good friend who has been in a very toxic relationship, and we found all of this out just a few months ago. Essentially, she had been dating a man for close to 3 years, and they got engaged. A few months later, we found out that he was, in fact, married, according to some IRS tax returns we found, where he was filing jointly or alternatively committing massive tax fraud, also engaged to another woman in a different city while living with my friend. And while she had talked to the woman who we presumed to be his wife, she responded that she didn't want to be any part of the drama, which leads us to believe that she knows about the con. Through multiple conversations with each of our friends, we've been piecing together different parts of the relationship that we had not all been privy to as they were happening, which we would have flagged as problematic. She had seemingly been paying for his son's private school at about $8,000 a month, paid cash for a luxury car for him. She was buying all of his work flights, supporting both of them in the upwards of $200,000. And then as we were moving his stuff out, we found cameras that she didn't know about. And there was other manipulative relationship things that were unacceptable, in addition to also physically touching her more than once to our knowledge. When she moved him out, we found out that she had continued to talk to him, and recently emailed us all that she wants to continue to have a loving, healthy relationship with him, and that they're going to try to start over. And our friends are really struggling to figure out how we continue to engage with her in what we do. We want to be her friends, but we're not sure how to be supportive of her without enabling a toxic and manipulative relationship. I keep thinking we can ignore it and pretend it's not happening, or tell her how we feel and risk alienating her, or we can be supportive and suggest that we'll be there for her no matter what, period. But we're struggling. We don't know what to do. Can you give us some advice on how we can be the best friends possible in this situation without condoning this terrible relationship that is potentially going to wreck her financially, as well as hurt her emotionally more in the long term, when seemingly she has continued to fall into this manipulative trap?
It is extremely frustrating to rescue someone from a burning building and then watch them look back at the building that's on fire and then rush back inside and tell you that that's where they want to live. They want to live in that burning building. I think we owe our friends that first rescue. I think we owe it to our friends to pull them from the burning building that one time. But if they choose to go back into that burning building, if that's where they want to live, your friend's a fucking adult. She gets to make her own choices, and she will have to live with and shoulder the consequences of those choices. You can and should appeal to her, press her, tell her that this is a terrible relationship, that he's a toxic and manipulative guy, that he's using her, that he's draining her financially, that he's a parasite. But if she wants to be drained, if she wants to be the host to his parasite, there's nothing that you can do about it. And we feel as friends, we need to be supportive. We need to always be there. But there's a point at which being there becomes complicit. There's a point at which being there is enabling. And so sometimes the loving thing to do as a friend is to say to someone, this is a terrible relationship. It's bad for you. I am not going to hang out and watch this happen. I am not going to watch the building that you're inside of burn with you inside of it. Give me a call. When you are ready to finally get the fuck out of this burning building, you give me a call and I will be there for you. I will come help pack your shit again. I guess I will rush back into that burning building a second time when you are ready to get out. Because you can't drag them out. And until that call comes, you can see very little of your friend with a clear conscience. You can cut your friend out of your life with a clear conscience. You have let them know that you will support them when they are ready to make the choice that is in their own best interests. But you're not going to hang out and smile and enable them to stay. You're not going to play along with this. You're not going to watch your friend be used and abused. You'll be there when they're ready to end the use, end the abuse. You will be there for your friend when she is ready to scrape that parasite off, finally. But you're not going to be there to watch him use her and drain her in real time, in real life. You won't be there for it. You won't be there to watch it. You will be there when she is ready to get the fuck out. That's when you will be there. That's how you be supportive to a friend who is in this kind of circumstance. You draw a line.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. Creating your site with Squarespace is a simple, intuitive process. You can add and arrange your content and features with the click of a mouse. Design a great-looking online store with Squarespace's award-winning templates, customizable settings, and more, all without a single plugin. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you need help, they offer 24/7 customer support. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE to get 10% off your first purchase. That's squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE.
Good afternoon. I'm married. I've been married for 5 years, and I recently got out of the military. When I was in the military, I really started working on myself because I was I wasn't a good husband. And lately, I'm also a very sexual person, and lately I just cannot get my wife turned on. When we do have sex, she just kind of lays there. And I'm in this position where I'm putting in a lot of effort. You know, I try not to orgasm very fast. I have tried sex toys. I'll do bondage. Like, I've tried so many things, and I just need help. It's taking a very big toll on our marriage, and it's making me, as a man, feel very insecure. And, you know, I'm struggling.
Welcome home. Thank you for your service. Have you eaten your wife's pussy? You might want to go down on her. If that doesn't work, and if your wife isn't someone you can talk to about this, if you have to call Strangers with Sex Advice podcast to ask what to do that might turn your wife on, your problems are bigger than just sex. You need to have a conversation with your wife about what turns her on. Like, you can try bondage, but if bondage isn't something that turns someone on, tying them up isn't going to, surprise, turn them on. You have to ask your wife what turns her on, not ask this faggot what might turn your wife on. I would just be guessing. I have no idea why you two aren't clicking sexually. Talk to the wife. Have a conversation. And if nothing you can do works, well, then perhaps you're sexually incompatible, and then your choices are you can get a divorce and start over and find new sex partners, or you can open up the relationship and seek sexual fulfillment outside the relationship while still being each other's primary partner, and if you have kids, co-parents, and whatever else. Seems like that might not be what you want, an open relationship. Sounds like you're really into being with the person that you are with. Sounds like you might be naturally inclined toward monogamy and making an effort. Good for you on both scores. But if there's nothing that you can do, if there's no way for you to ever turn your wife on, if your sexual connection is irrevocably broken, or if it was never there in the first place, then you probably need to pull the plug and start over. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? But that perfect balance between looking good and being comfy, that's hard to find. You don't have to sacrifice style or comfort, though. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world just right for you. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will own, made from sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. Ultimate feel-good undies for you when you want to feel naked, not be naked. For the fellas, MeUndies' diamond-seamed pouch cradles your jewels and gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling too tight. And ladies love the soft, eco-friendly fabric. Right, Nancy? Nancy is nodding her head enthusiastically. She got herself a monthly subscription. They send her new underpants every month, and she gives out a little girly squeal when they arrive. Or so I am told. Nancy and I don't actually live together, so I'm not there when her packages come. But they come. Right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for my listeners. Get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. And MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You order a pair, and if you don't love your first pair, get a full refund. It's so worth a try. 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. Get on it, people. And it helps us here at the Lovecast if you do. So to get your 20% off, free shipping, and their 100% satisfaction guarantee, and the best and softest underwear you will ever own, and support the Lovecast, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage. This is a limited time offer. Start wearing the best underwear of your life. Go to MeUndies.com/savage right now.
Hi, Dan. I am a 27-year-old female living on the East Coast, and I have a question about privacy. My boyfriend and I have been dating, seeing each other for about a year, and I have recently gotten my own apartment. He has a set of keys, which is fine, but he will go to my house when I am not there. I don't have a set of keys to his apartment, and he has roommates, and I would also never feel comfortable just going over to his house and letting myself in. I've spoken to friends about this, and everyone is sort of under the consensus that it's super weird that he lets himself in, especially when I'm not there. He also doesn't tell me that he's going to go over to my house. He'll just go in and hang out. I've broached the topic of privacy with him before. Early on in our relationship, he'd kind of just like wander into the bathroom when I was peeing. Or he'll take my phone and like just start using my phone. I'm not a super private person, but I do like having boundaries. When I've approached this topic with him, he gets a little confused. And I've also seen it in other areas of his life as well. Like sometimes he'll go use his sister's computer when she's not home and when she's asked him not to use it. Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering about how to talk about it with him, because I've asked him to like text me if he's thinking of going over. It's not even asking permission. It's just saying, hey, I'm going to be at your house later. Yeah, I would love to know your thoughts. I would love to have some feedback on how to talk about this with him, because it's really giving me grief.
Some weeks I think we should remake the Savage Lovecast as a game show, and we'll call it, Is He Dense or Is He an Asshole? Your boyfriend is either dense or he's an asshole. He's a selfish fucking asshole who doesn't respect other people's boundaries or their personal property or their preferences around who uses their computers or who's in their space and when. My advice to you, change the fucking locks on your apartment or ask for the goddamn key back and tell him why you're asking for the key back. I have asked you not to enter my apartment without at least telling me that you're there. I would prefer that you not be in my apartment unless I'm there. The reason you give somebody you've been dating a key after the short time that we've been dating is so that if they sleep over and if you have to leave before them, they can lock the door on the way out. Not so they can come and go at their leisure. Because we're not in that kind of relationship yet. We haven't merged yet. We're not partners yet. This isn't our apartment. This is my apartment that you have access to through me when I am there. And you have a key for not your convenience. You have a key for my convenience so that I can leave some mornings before you leave. Or if we want to meet together at the apartment and say I'm cooking up a storm and you come to the door, I don't have to abandon the souffle at a critical moment. You can let yourself in. At that moment that you've been invited over for dinner, appropriate to let yourself in? When I'm at work or out of town, not an appropriate moment for you to be letting yourself into what is still, for the time being, my apartment and mine alone. So, give me my keys back. You've proven yourself untrustworthy. No respect for boundaries. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt just in asking for the keys back rather than dumping you, because I'm going with... In the game show, is he dense or is he an asshole? I'm going with dense and not asshole. If I thought you were an asshole, I'd be dumping you. So I am doing you a favor and for the time being, assuming dense. So keys, please. And if he won't cough the keys up, change the locks. And if he gives you grief about it, then he's an asshole and you will have to dump him.
Hi, Dan, the Tech Savvy at Rescue. So I'm a gay man on the East Coast, and I've met this very nice couple who I'm very attracted to, both of them, and they're both very attracted to me, and there's oodles of chemistry and the sex. It's great. And they've been together 6.5 years, and the kind of the dynamic would lend itself to kind of a poly situation. And I just kind of wonder what your thought is on, like, if that's even a thing that you would ask about, what their thoughts are, if they're purely open or what. I'm open to pretty much whatever, open to having friends and, you know, fuck buddies and just being around them, because I actually genuinely like them. And in any other situation, I would date either one of them. And they both happen to be they've been in a relationship for a number of years now. And so, like, is it something that I should just kind of let ride and see what happens, and then maybe turn around a year from now and go, hey, by the way, look, we've, you know, been doing this whole thing for a year? Or is it something that I should, in your opinion, like, announce or hint at my interest in such an arrangement early on?
Sounds like you just started fucking these guys. If you were fucking somebody, you just started fucking somebody who is single, and you immediately wanted to have a conversation about the future and the kind of commitment that you might be willing to make to that person, the kind of marriage you might want to have, it would likely spook that guy. That's kind of one of those good judgment moments. Like, even if the both of you are besotted and it's just two people and both are besotted at this moment, it could be unnerving if one person started to have this conversation about the next 6 or 7 decades when you barely know each other. Because that's hustling someone into making an emotional commitment early and during the sort of like besotted stage. You don't want to be asked to write a check that you can't cash at that moment. What you want to do is just continue to enjoy each other and then allow it to be the pleasure and joy that it is. And at a certain point, you realize this has legs. This is going to go on indefinitely. We may need to start calling each other boyfriends, or we may need to start talking about the long, long-term shit, about whether we're both interested in marriage, whether we're both interested in having children, what we want from a life partner as opposed to the person that we're enjoying spending time with this summer. Rush that conversation and you're likely to get dumped, even by someone who's as besotted with you at that moment as you are with them, because it shows bad judgment, because it can spook people. Rush the conversation with this couple about your intentions toward them and their intentions toward you and whether you're ever going to get polyamorously gay married. Start talking to them about your thruple China pattern for your thruple gift registry, and they might bolt. So yeah, now is not the time. You never say how long you've been fucking these guys, but if you're looking ahead a year, I'm going to assume it hasn't been very long. I'm going to assume it's been a matter of weeks. And it's lovely that you feel so good about both of them and that you're attracted to both of them and both of them are attracted to you, but you don't really know them well. So stop thinking years and years down the line and start thinking about this moment. Like I said to somebody in Savage Love this week, don't commit to them. Commit to continuing to get to know them, but don't commit to them. And don't have a conversation about committing to them. Maybe have a conversation about being committed to enjoying this, whatever it is, for however long it is. And conversations about the shape of the relationship or the commitment or whether you're open to being the third in a thruple, that'll come in time. You typically put those labels on something when it has revealed itself to already be that thing. You start calling each other boyfriend when you know each other to be boyfriends, when you are behaving as boyfriends. You don't round each other up to boyfriend. You are boyfriends. And at a certain point, you admit it and start saying that. Same thing with thrupledom. Start calling it a thruple when it's clear and apparent that that's how you're moving through the world, that you are a thruple. So your idea about waiting a year to have that conversation, or ideally allowing that conversation to happen naturally over time, that's the better idea. Don't rush the convo. Don't have it now. Enjoy your time with these guys, however long it lasts.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 28-year-old cis straight guy living in Southern California. I'm actually calling because I need some recommendation on how to educate my parents. I'm from a super conservative state in the Intermountain West, and both of my parents are from really small towns. And my brother actually came out about a year ago. Both of my parents had amazing reactions. They were compassionate and understanding and all of that. The only hiccup in all of this is I don't think they've ever really had a close relationship with a queer person before. Because I live in Southern California and most of my friends are queer, my parents kind of treated me like their gay Wikipedia. And one thing I've run into lately is they'll ask me super offensive and inappropriate questions, but there's no malice there. They just genuinely don't know that it's inappropriate to ask whether my brother or his boyfriend is the guy in the relationship. So I've tried to explain to them, like, these are things that you can't ask and all that. And they seem to understand, but I also don't think that they fully like accept it as true because it's coming from me. And like I said, there's no malice at all in this. It's just pure ignorance. So I'm just wondering if you have any recommendations on books or movies or anything else that I could refer them to kind of bridge that gap and say, no, there's really other people that agree that you can't say these things and that that's inappropriate.
So your brother came out. And your parents have a lot of questions, and they're asking you, his straight brother, the straight sibling of their gay son, these questions because they fear perhaps asking your gay brother these questions because they don't want to offend him. I think that they should ask your gay brother these questions. And I think the correct tack to take with family after you come out is to answer all of their stupid fucking questions, because would you rather that they ask or that they wonder? I would rather they ask, because the cure for ignorance is answers. And I just don't think the right thing to say is go do your homework, read these books, watch these movies, although you can provide them with lots of books, lots of movies out there about gay people and the gay experience and the queer community. I always think, and this is a 40-year-old reference, the PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, had this book that you could give to your parents when you came out in the dark ages called Now That You Know, Questions That Parents Might Have About Homosexuality After Their Child Comes Out. You could maybe find that or see what PFLAG is churning out these days for parents. But I think the best tack to take with family who are asking questions not out of malice but ignorance is to give them the answers that they need to cure their ignorance and not to get all fucking huffy about it. Who is the guy in the relationship? That is a question that I had to answer again and again and again from my siblings, from my parents, from my aunts and uncles, ad nauseum. And I had asked them when I came out to them, I had asked for their understanding. And they were asking me to help them understand. So what was the point or the utility in me blowing up at them because they were asking stupid questions? They aren't inappropriate. They may be stupid, they may be misinformed, but they're really not inappropriate. And they're questions that people continually ask. I was asked these same questions 40 fucking years ago, 35 fucking years ago when I came out to my family. You're being asked these questions today by your parents about your gay sibling. This is a question that we may always have to answer because most people understand relationships, sadly and unnecessarily, through the prism of male roles and female roles. And so when there's a relationship and it's two women or two men, people get confused. So long as they're not disguising hostility or hatred as confusion or ignorance, answer their fucking questions. That is the quickest way through this. It's the quickest way to cure their ignorance is to give them the answers that they're asking you for, to help them do what you ask them to do, which is to understand, which includes understanding your difference, which means answering sometimes some awkward questions. So stop scolding your parents for asking inappropriate questions. Praise your parents for seeking information. You can, if you wish, throw some books at your parents. Is It a Choice? Answers to 300 of the Most Frequently Asked Questions About Gay and Lesbian People by Eric Marcus. Always My Child, A Parent's Guide to Understanding Your Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender, or Questioning Son or Daughter by Kevin Jennings. Out of the Closet and Into Our Hearts by Laura Siegel and Nancy Lampkin Olson. Beyond Acceptance, Parents of Lesbians and Gays Talk About Their Experiences. These books are out there and they are a Google search away. That's how I was able to rattle off these titles. Not so hard to find. But I think the correct tack to take with your parents is to give them a few of these books and then welcome their questions when they have questions. Because they may read that no one's the guy or girl in the relationship, that they are two individual human beings in the relationship, and not fully understand it until that is reinforced after they ask the question. They may read that passage, they may read the answer to that question, and it may not stick until they hear it come out of your mouth or they hear it come out of your brother's mouth. So give them the books, answer their questions, so long as they're not being malicious, so long as this isn't hate and aggression masquerading as ignorance. Is it genuine ignorance? The cure is a compassionate, thoughtful answer. We have to, when we come out to our parents, treat them the way we're asking them to treat us, with compassion and patience and understanding.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling about the episode last week with the woman who, she gets really cold and she likes her socks on and her partner's out. My wife gets really cold, basically all the time she's freezing. And, you know, I totally appreciate what her partners are saying, because the socks that you wear every day sometimes don't feel so nice on you if you like wrap your legs around someone. But just wear long socks, like over the knee socks. It's a huge fetish for lots of guys. It's very attractive. Get some nice sexy socks, put those on. Even for people like me, I'm not a foot guy, I'm not really like a sock fetish guy. It just looks great. It'll keep you warmer and it might solve both problems.
Hey Dan, to the lady that likes her socks on during sex, that's a straight male. I myself like to wear socks during sex. Not because I get cold, because I don't like my feet touching other things. I'd say rock on with your socks on.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy at Risk user. I'm calling to give some advice to the woman in episode 564 whose boyfriend's dick is too big for her mouth. And I'm dating a guy right now who also is well endowed. And the other night, my jaw was getting really, really sore. And I had to take his dick out of my mouth. And he was like, baby, you know, put it back in your mouth. And I was like, I can't, babe. It's so fucking big. And he flipped me over and started eating me out. He was really turned on. So, yeah, just like dirty talk the fuck out of it. You know, let him know how massive it is and how you can't fit it in your mouth. Good luck to you, hon.
All right. Before we leave it there, a quick message. To Dylan from Boston, I received a note from your service member in Egypt. He says he's sorry he can't be with you for your birthday and asked me to wish you a very happy birthday this Saturday, August 26th. He loves you and misses you, and your support, encouragement, and positivity, especially right now, mean everything to him. Thank you for what you're doing, Dylan, and have a happy birthday. Best wishes from me, the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth, and Nancy. And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Love Cast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz at 206-302-2064. The deadline to submit films to Hump, My Dirty Little Film Festival, is approaching quickly. It's in September. Go to humpfilmfest.com for information about submitting a film to Hump. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Alexander Chavez on Twitter at BadAlexanderChavez. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.